Hello, everybody out there in internet radio land. This is Blake Ruby. Welcome to my show, Gods and Goddesses. I love my little introduction music there. It gives me chills sometimes. It reminds me of the call of the wild. It's actually the call of the soul. You know, the call of the soul is the call to develop yourself spiritually. It's the call of evolution, the call to do what we're here for. You know, as human beings on a planet, in a solar system, in the galaxy, in a universe, in the universe. It's amazing. It really is. Again, welcome to my show. I'm going to talk for a little while, and then I'm going to do what I've done in previous shows, and that is read out loud from some of my favorite books. I think reading out loud is the best thing that you can do if you're shy, if you're not a public speaker and you want to be one, because it will help you. It will help you become famous even, you know. President Abraham Lincoln, I'm watching this show right now on CNN, Sunday nights, Divided We Stand, which is not really a good title, I suppose, but I've been watching it now for about a month, and it's all about Abraham Lincoln and his rise to the presidency and what happened back then with the Civil War. And if you didn't know, he was a great orator. In other words, he gave great speeches. The man could talk. And one thing he liked to do was read his speeches out loud. So what does that tell you? Even back then, people knew that secret. So if you're someone who's into public speaking, and everybody should be. I mean, in my opinion, they should teach it in school from the very beginning. I'm talking about kindergarten, you know, or first grade anyway. Just have Jack, John, Jane, Sally go up to the front of the class and read in front of the class, get them used to it. And that way, it will avoid, like what happened to me, around about the eighth grade, maybe when I was going into puberty, I became terribly shy. Before that, though, I was the clown of the classroom. You know, I used to have the classroom. I remember in the sixth grade, I had all my classmates roaring in laughter, you know, at some of the things I would do, some of the things I would say. And after the eighth grade until many years, actually, after, even when I'd gone through high school and junior college 2 years, and when I joined the Army, and several years after that, not until did I get up in front of formations, you know, and have to give orders and march and cadence, you know, singing cadence and running and singing cadence, did I really start to get over my terror, my fear of speaking in public, you know, in front of people. And it shouldn't be rocket science, my friends. You know, it's all about the heart and learning how to control our feelings and understanding what's going on, knowing what your voice sounds like. And now I'm so much better than I used to be. And over the years, and I've been a Toastmaster, you know, practicing public speaking nowadays for the last few years, once a week for an hour, you know, in our club meeting. And I can give speeches. I can host the meeting. I know all the protocol. And rarely will I be embarrassed by anything that I say or should have said, you know, because I've been fearful of speaking in front of people. And there's a lot of people out there, maybe you or someone you know, is that way. And the world would be a better place, I think, if we weren't afraid of speaking in public. And I'm talking about, say, for example, all of a sudden there was a knock on your door and Channel 10 News was there with their huge camera, and they wanted to ask you a few questions, you know, because they had to go live on the news tonight, you know, and you realize all of a sudden you're going to have hundreds of thousands of people watching you. Well, automatically, you know, your heart starts beating faster and the mouth might get dry. It's hard to swallow. And your voice might start to crack a little bit. You know, pretty typical characteristics of what happens when you're not in control of yourself, because really you haven't had any practice. And that's what it's about. Practice makes perfect. It's like riding a bicycle, kind of. When you first started riding a bicycle, it wasn't easy, you know. But then you got used to it the more you did. Like with driving a car. You're not the driver you were back then that you are now, right? Because you've had years of practice. And now it's like secondhand to you. It's the same thing with public speaking, but we don't give it the attention it deserves. You know, we look at the people on television, the news broadcasters, and they seem so good. But they do it some of them do it 7 days a week, you know. And they've gotten over that fear because they practice it all the time. So what I'm going to do is read out loud. That's one thing I like to do, reading a book out loud, not just from a computer. And I want to tell you something, among other things. And I've mentioned this before. I've got sleep apnea. And many Americans do, you know, maybe 60, 70 million Americans have sleep apnea. So I'm not alone, and it's a pretty common thing. So you might ask yourself, well, why is that, you know? Why, especially in our age, you know, modern, in the world today, so to speak, are so many people living with sleep apnea? Not everybody has it. Some people live normal lives. Other people have to wear CPAP machines. I don't have one. I've been trying to get one. It's a long story. I've been kind of screwed over by these people who were supposed to be looking after me. And for lack of a better way of describing it, but I'm going to get my machine that I had before. I turned it back in because I was starting to get sick using it. But now I need it back, but then again, I'm not really looking forward to getting it because I didn't like the feeling I had when I woke up in the morning after having that air pumped into your nostrils, you know. It's not fresh air, for one thing. But some people need it, you know. It's better than these attacks you get. I get these constantly. Not all the time. I had one last night. You wake up and all of a sudden you realize you're not breathing, you know. Your body stopped breathing, and so scary feeling, you know. So why is that? And I'm a person that likes to try to investigate why things are the way they are. Why is that? And I've come to the conclusion that, and it's a work in progress, you know, the things I observe and experience firsthand. And I think it's because we are exposing ourselves to computers, and you might have known this already, all day. In my job, I work behind a computer all day. I type 8 hours a day. I've got a standing workstation, so that's to my advantage, you know. They say that's good to have one of these sit-stand workstations, like, I forget the name of it. There are several out there. But I like to stand, and if somebody wants to, they can also sit and alternate between sitting and standing, but that's beside the point. The point is that we're exposing our eyes to the glare of a computer all day, you know, that light. And then usually at the end of the day, I like to watch a little television, but typically that ends up with me in my bedroom falling asleep while watching television. And my wife, you know, she'll go, and all of a sudden I realize, you know, I've started to nod, and my head has dropped down, you know, on my neck, and I've been falling asleep. And, you know, may God bless my wife. She kind of connects the dots there. Surely enough, after that, I'll have a sleep apnea attack, you know, where you stop breathing. Television also, they say one thing, and I'm thinking out loud here, you know, for not only for the benefit of myself, but for anyone that might be interested, who I might be able to help with this, you know, why not? It's all about helping each other, you know, in this world today. I'm talking about everyday issues, you know, my life, sharing my life with you. And so I think I need to make some changes. And I've been writing down what these changes are that I need to make, not only with that area of my life, but many other different areas. You know, keeping a journal or a diary, if you will. And I've got so many different subjects in regard to my life. It could be exercising, you know, what kind of exercise I've been doing, whether it's a run, 1 mile run, or 2 miles, or maybe today I did Zumba at the gym, Gold's Gym. I've done a lot of sprints in the past, over the past few years, 100, 200 meter, 400 meter sprinting, you know, on the track, on the road, the run walk, you know, where you walk some and then run some, walk some. So that's like a work in progress to see what works best. And it's such a, you know, fine tuning your life to do the right thing is, in all these different areas, is not easy. And I'm pretty sure I'm not the only one out there that's experiencing that. You know, we are human beings, you know, living on this planet. I mean, we're not animals, you know, we're not dogs. We don't bark, or we're not cats. We're not birds. You know, we don't talk like them. We're human beings, whether you're Asian or you're African American or Native American Indian. We're all human beings. You know, we're born. We develop in a mother's womb. We're born, and we live our lives, even though we look different. You know, you go to a country like Korea or Japan, and you see all these Asian people, and you might think, oh, my God, you know, it's kind of frightening, really. Look at me. I'm not like them. They're not like me. But they're human beings. There's different variations of human beings. It doesn't make one group of people better than the next, you know. White supremacists think they're better than African-American people. Racism still exists in our country, you know. And as I was mentioning with Lincoln back then, having black people in slavery, they thought it was okay. A lot of people thought that was cool, you know. But we need them. It's all about money, too, you know. They needed them to work their plantations and harvest the cotton and other products, you know. And they were treated terribly. And the women were raped and men were killed and beaten, you know, with scars on their backs. And there's no place for racism in our modern-day world as we evolve, you know, as human beings going into the future. We want to make contact with extraterrestrials because that is like, remember at the beginning of Star Trek, to boldly go where no man has gone before? That is what it's all about, exploring that final frontier. Because deep inside every human being on this planet, I believe, is that yearning. As I mentioned before, the call of the wild, but also the call to explore, just like they had 200 years ago with Columbus, you know, to explore our planet, to go where no one had gone before. They thought the world was flat. Can you imagine that? And so they boldly set off across the ocean to discover these new lands that they heard of. I don't know. I guess the Norsemen, the Norwegians had discovered North America, you know, back around 1400, maybe even before, maybe a few hundred years before then. So perhaps that's where they got the information from. But anyway, and then Copernicus said, what you're all thinking about in regard to our planet being at the center of the universe is wrong. No, we're actually revolving around our sun, rotating on our axis, And our solar system is revolving around our Milky Way galaxy, and our Milky Way galaxy is revolving around the center of the universe. And you're wrong. And they said, heresy. Knock that man up. Put him in house arrest. You know, the way people thought, you know, back then. But then, even if it was back then, there were human beings just like us, like we're alive right now. You know, we are alive. Isn't that amazing? That's the way I like to, and I change subjects fast here, you know, when I'm talking one thing after another. When I go down the street, or if I'm in a store, or in a restaurant, I like to think of people as being alive. You know, you walk past someone on the street, you say hello to them, right? Raise your hand, wave. Hi, how you doing? It's something simple, because, you know, that person could be dead, like, tomorrow. You don't know that. Where do they go? It's kind of like a huge mystery, you know, a big question mark. So I think of people as being alive. I like to think that because we're alive. Oh, man, it's true. But you know what? There's no need to fear or worry because everything is good. I believe in the creator of the universe who has orchestrated this whole plan of the expansion of the universe, you know, and it's been going on for billions of years, my friends. This whole plan of the creator of the universe is powerful beyond comprehension, you know. The creator of the universe is magical beyond comprehension. We're talking about a being, you know, we can break it down easy to understand. A being that, simply put, created something out of nothing. Yes, and all this life on our world, as I mentioned, one of the things I'd love to mention, if you've listened to my previous shows, if you have, thank you for being a loyal fan. I love you so much. Yes. I'm looking at a cat. We have one of our cats out here on our patio. It's a white cat. The name is Yin Yang, or Snowball. It's a beautiful cat. I call her stealth because when she's walking around, she's like a self-master. You know, she's looking around, moving fast, you know, turning her head really quickly and jumps at the slightest noise, you know. Back to the creator of the universe. So the plan was to expand the universe. And all this life on our planet, from the over a million types of insects to over 30,000 types of fish in the seas, the oceans, the rivers, the lakes, over 10,000 types of birds and reptiles, over 9,000 types of amphibians, over 5,000 types of mammals, all the flowers and trees, the fruits and the vegetables. Well, if all that life happened by accident, logically, now I'm going to ask you, logically, tell me if I'm right or wrong. I know I can't hear you, but logically, if it happened by accident here, it could happen anywhere in the universe. And we know now with the Kepler Space Telescope, they're discovering planets all the time. So we know there's other planets out there. So don't put that one on me, you know? There's other planets out there. And if all this life on Earth happened by accident, and it could happen by accident easily on another planet, elsewhere, I mean, anywhere, A-N-Y-H-E-R-E, anywhere in the universe. But if there is a creator who is powerful and knowledgeable enough to create this life on Earth, then logically that creator would have the power and the knowledge to create either the same or different life anywhere in the universe. Jordan fades back, shoots, swish, game over for all you atheists and agnostics out there. Sorry to burst your bubble, but didn't I just prove it through logic? No, well, you always take the opposite stance. You know, that's what I kind of like about atheists. No matter what you say, they'll take the opposite stance. But that's a good thing. I see that as a good thing. You know, you watch a football game, the Super Bowl, with an atheist. And they'll say, what team are you rooting for? Well, like the Cowboys, you know, the Cowboys are playing the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Oh, I'm a Tampa Bay Buccaneer fan. Okay, be that way. That's cool. It's all right. I still love you, you know. So going back to what I was saying before, exercise, the sleep apnea, hot and cold showers. You know, I like taking hot and cold showers. Why? Because there's so many benefits. Hydrotherapy, you know, taking a shower, the simple act of taking a shower can make your day. Believe it or not, it can improve your mood. It can change your feeling not so good to feeling good. But the problem is, some people, they'll just take a hot shower, and that's it. But you're missing out on the cold, because the cold has so many benefits. Just look on the internet. I won't explain them right. Well, I'll explain a few, you know. I mean, it helps with your breathing. It helps with your metabolism. It clears the toxins out of your body. It's good for the skin and the hair. But check the internet, what it says about contrast showers. There's a lot of people that believe in them. Sean Connery, may God bless his soul, he was a firm believer in contrast showers. And there, you have some actresses out there, great Hollywood legends like Katharine Hepburn, Audrey Hepburn, who believed in the cold shower, cold baths, I mean, really cold. And, you know, athletes take cold showers and baths, too. It helps with the muscles. But another thing that contrast showers do is they help with muscle soreness after you work out, if you've done a really intense workout, muscle recovery. Take a hot, cold shower, and it will help you, I guarantee it. But don't do anything without first checking with your doctor, okay? Because I don't want to be sued by anybody. Look, I don't think it would happen, but you know what I mean. Because it is kind of a shock, you know. You've heard these people in the polar bear clubs, you know, in the Scandinavian countries where they go in a sauna and they get really steamed up and hot, and then they go and jump in a hole in a frozen lake, you know. And that's too intense. I mean, that will just knock the breath right out. Actually, literally knock the breath out of you, you know. And you're going to be able to handle it. It is very intense. But I'm just talking about hot shower, cold shower. You take maybe a hot shower for, it's a 3-to-1 ratio. So you maybe take a hot shower for 3 minutes, cold shower 1 minute, always end on the cold shower. And that's what I've been doing. And it has helped me with my breathing, because I occasionally will get my nose blocked up, one nostril or the other. And it's a pretty common thing with people. And that helps, you know, to the steam from the hot shower will kind of clear my airways, and then the cold water will. That always, you know, I've taken a lot of just plain cold showers before. Like I took a cold shower every day for like 400 days in a row without any hot showers. But it can be painful, especially at night. You want to take a shower and you've been working all day, you know, and it's cold out. Or maybe you have freezing temperatures outside, and then you take a cold shower. But the thing about that is it feels good warming up. Usually, though, if you take only hot showers, then when you step out of the shower, then you cool down. But when you take a cold shower and you step out of the shower, you warm up. So it's like the opposite. And it feels good, but it's not easy. And it's supposed to help make you tougher, too. There's a video on the internet called The Art of Manliness, you know, about taking only cold showers. But now, from my experience, I think hot, cold showers or contrast showers are better. So these are some of the things I go through. And, you know, my whole day, from the moment I wake up to when I go to the bed, is all about improving myself to be the best I can be, the best person. You know, in all facets of my life. And I went to Zumba today with my, I was mentioning that Zumba is a form of exercise. I went to the gym with my wife we got there a little bit late. You know, it's an hour class, and I'm very good at running around. I jump up and down. I spin around on the tips of my toes. I'm a former black belt in Taekwondo. When I was in Korea with the U.S. Army, I got my black belt back in 1988. Before that, I was living in San Diego, California for 8 years, 1973. We moved there from Guadalajara when I graduated from high school. And I started taking another form of Korean karate called Tang Sudo. And I worked up to a green belt, which is pretty good. I mean, I had the basic punches, blocks, kicks down. And so when I got to Korea with the U.S. Army, I enrolled in Taekwondo, and I took my first black belt test, and I failed it, and I had to take it again. And so the second time I got it, I've got a certificate. I can't remember where it is. Somewhere in the house. It's from a place in Yongsan called Kukiwon, for any of you that might know that area. It's got my picture on it, and it shows I'm a first-degree black belt in Taekwondo. So I incorporate some of my moves that I learned in my dancing, you know, in Zumba. I do a lot of punching. Not that I'm going to hit somebody, because I've never hit anybody in my whole life, except when sparring, you know. Being a black belt, you have to show just how good you are. So when you hit somebody, it's like eye contact, you know, or you kick them in the shoulder, and or you come really close to hitting them. So that was something you always prided yourself on, how you could either do a punch or a kick and not hurt anybody, you know, maybe just a slap with a punch or a kick. But besides that, it's good exercise for the arms, you know. And I call it, my own way of calling it, is the way of the closed fist, too. Is when you close your fist, you keep that energy inside you, the ki that you have inside. You know, you've heard of the ki, right, the inner energy. Well, by closing your fists, you help channel that energy. It helps you channel it. And then also doing kicks, you know, up over my head, both legs, and then crescent kicks where you have the sweeping right to left, go left to right, you know, with legs. And then more jumping around, spinning around, running. I like to run backwards. That's one of my things. So I'll be dancing to the music, running forwards, running backwards, running forwards, running backwards. And I do it well. I think I'm pretty good. You know, I love the way I dance. I'm proud of myself for that. Anyway, so tonight is a special night. Moving on, another subject. Please go out and look up at the stars and think of universal love, my friends out there in internet radio land. Many thanks to BBS Radio, by the way. A shout out to them. A shout out to my son, who may be listening in Burbank, California, and anyone who knows me. Thank you for listening to my show, Gods and Goddesses. You are all co-creator gods in the making. If you could die, you are a co-creator god in the making. Logical? Yes. So Saturday night, tonight, is the Universal Love Night, where we're all supposed to gather in a chain around the world, look up at the stars, you know, out there, which are really suns and planets, you know, a solar system. Because when you get a telescope, you know, a really good telescope, and you focus it on one of those stars out there, you'll see that it looks like a horseshoe, and the sun is in the middle, and the other objects around it are its orbiting planets. Yes, didn't you know that? Every star up there is actually a sun with planets around it. Now, our science and astronomy has not recognized it. That is so, which is bad on them, you know. That's another step in the right direction to proving that there is life out there. And I just proved it to you, logically, right, with what I said. I am so good. I am famous. I have proven that there's life out there without actually having them make contact with us or having a piece of metal from another planet, which some alchemist didn't put together here on Earth, you know, in a clever way, or having a face-to-face encounter with an extraterrestrial, one of our brothers and sisters in spirit out there, which would scare the bejesus out of you if you really did look at them, because they're so intelligent, you know. They know how to travel through space, go interdimensional, and they have lived longer than we have. Some of them have 20,000-year lifespans and have been traveling throughout the universe for millions of years. So you come face-to-face with a being like that and just looking into its eyes, and it's enough to, like, knock you out, you know, like you've been hit by an M1 tank, so to speak. But tonight is the night where we, one of those, they're doing it every once in a while, the Dr. Stephen Greer, G-R-E-E-R, is an amazing man, and he is the leader of the Disclosure Project, which is trying to, and has been for many years, like going back in the 90s, trying to get the governments of the world to come out of the closet, so to speak, with what they know about extraterrestrials and UFOs. And it's understandable they want to keep it under wraps because, you know, it could panic the people and it's a national security threat. But in the same time, it is stunting our growth, our evolution to be who the Creator wants us to be, you know, a part of the intergalactic community. You know, just imagine that. If we were star trappers, wouldn't that be so interesting and so exciting to go to a neighboring, our closest neighboring solar system and take a look at the planets, what they look like, the colors, you know, the sizes? Wouldn't that be awesome? Just like in Star Trek, you know? That I remember when that came out in the 60s. I was living in Nashwauk City, New Brunswick, Canada. And I saw that on television. I was a fan right away. I would come home from school and sit in front of the television set and wait for Star Trek. I mean, William Shatner, Leonard Nimoy, you know, Captain Kirk, Spock, Doc, Bones, you know, all of them. They were awesome, you know, and the show was just so much ahead of its time back then. So we could be star travelers, and, you know, if we were friends with these beings out there, friends. Does anybody know what it's like to be a friend? They could teach us how to get rid of diseases. Yes, I mean, they know. They know the way, and they can shine the light in our path. You have to believe me that that is true. They know the way, and they're not violent. They're not out to destroy us. They could have done that by now, easy by now, if they'd wanted to. And so they could cure cancer. They could cure this COVID that's going on, you know, any viruses. I'm going to close it. Hold on. I'll be right back. I'm going to close the door. One of our dogs just came out, and I'm going to turn my stand around here so I see the television through the door, and I don't want to be distracted by the television, so I'm just moving my stand here. And so that not only they would help us cure diseases, understand all about that, not only being star travelers, you know, we would be our propulsion systems, you know, right now, or the fastest they can get us is like 40,000 miles an hour once we get into space. But by knowing the ETs, they would share their technology with us, all their technology, you know. It would be so helpful to our human race, you know. But unfortunately, that's not the way it is. But we can keep striving towards that goal, talking about it. And when you go outside and look at the stars tonight, please just think of universal brotherhood, sisterhood. Think of the creation of the universe. Think of these ETs out there who would love to make contact with us. They just know that we're not ready right now because there's so many other concerns we're going through. We don't even have time to think about them, really. We're so involved with our lives, our daily lives, working our jobs, raising our children, making money. You know, what are we going to eat next? When are we going to go to bed? When are we going to wake up? Well, we don't have time to think about all these thousands of different beings, sentient beings out there of different shapes and sizes and color skin, color hair, different eyes, size and shapes of eyes. And it's amazing, you know. So we're going to read from you. I'm going to read for you from this book called The Contact Has Begun. It's one of my favorite books. The author is Philip Kraff, K-R-A-P-F, who worked on the L.A. Times Metro desk for 25 years. I actually know him and communicate with him by email when he's in my last duty assignment in Caracas, Venezuela. I'm stationed there 2.5 years, and he's an awesome man and just a great, great, funny, humorous author, you know. And this book is an amazing read if you haven't read it already. It's called The Contact Has Begun. And he was abducted by these extraterrestrials he calls the Verdants. They're out there, my friends. The universe is full. Are you out there, Verdants, listening to me? I think they do. They love listening to my show. They probably all gather around in their spaceship in one, like, I think they are listening. In maybe an auditorium, maybe a little room, special room, and they channel on VBS radio. Saturday at 6 p.m., they listen to Gods and Goddesses by Blake Ruby, and they have popcorn, they eat popcorn, and just listen to me. You know, it's a compliment, really, that they respect me for my views, which are kind of revolutionary, you know. Someone who is among many, actually, nowadays, who is pushing for contact with these ETs. And these Verdants, they're called Verdants because their home planet is called Verdant. Verdant. And if you look up Verdant in the dictionary, it means like green grass light. But these aliens, they must be listening because I'm getting flustered a little bit. These extraterrestrials are about 5 feet tall, and they have grayish and tan, or maybe with a tinge of green colored skin, and they have dark, kind of slanted eyes, and their ears are a bit pointed like Mr. Spock's, and they're so intelligent. They must be listening. They are extremely intelligent, and I love them so much because they're trying to make contact with us. That's what they do. They travel the universe. They come up to an uncharted solar system, and surprise, surprise, even after traveling through the universe for millions of years, they're still coming up to uncharted solar systems. Because why? Because the boundaries of infinite space are expanding as I speak, my friends. As we live our lives today, infinite space is expanding. Can you grasp that concept? So these ETs, they came upon our planet maybe several hundred years ago, maybe a couple thousand years ago, and they set up an observation post, if you will, with their mothership, you know, and they sent their shuttlecraft to the Earth, and they've been abducting people. Maybe that's not the right word to use. You know, it sounds kind of harsh. And there are other extraterrestrial species that do these experiments on human beings, which are crude, suffice it to say. But these ones are more refined and probably more intelligent. And they are the dominant species of the universe, apparently. They've colonized many planets throughout the universe. And they number in the area of about trillions and trillions. There's trillions, 500 trillion maybe. Hold on. What am I doing on time here? Time does seem to fly. Well, I'm going to read from chapter one in the book. When Mr. Kraft gets abducted up into the spacecraft. And last week, I believe I read about the other abduction of Michael Desmarquette in the book Abduction to the Ninth Planet, or Thayuba, the Golden Planet, but this is called The Contact Has Begun. And here goes. Chapter 1, The Unthinkable Occurs. I awoke with a start and found the bedroom bathed in the bluish iridescent light. At first, I thought I had fallen asleep with the TV on. I groped for the remote control on the nightstand. The lighted dial on the bedside digital clock radio read 2:32 a.m. It was early Wednesday, June the 11th, 1997. I turned to aim the remote at the TV set, but the screen was dark. A small, cold shiver of apprehension raced down my spine as I tried to identify and comprehend the source of the eerie light. Since I consider myself an extremely rational person, and am as devoid of superstitious beliefs as humanly possible, my racing mind was searching for a logical explanation. At the same time, the light slowly began to pulsate and shimmer, changing alternately to a slightly darker shade of blue, and then brightening to a lighter shade of blue-white. I reached for my glasses on the nightstand and then turned my attention to the bedroom window, thinking that perhaps the strange light was coming from there. But the drapes were tightly drawn. No, this light definitely had to be originating from inside the room, and I was more mystified than fearful. I swung out of bed and headed for the doorway and the wall switch that controls the bedroom light. But I got no more than two or three steps before the pulsating bluish-white light, which had washed the room in a subdued flood-like fashion, suddenly narrowed into a tightly concentrated spotlight beam, and was focused directly on me. So another thing, too, my friends, about, let me just stop right here, reading out loud, reading from a book is good, because when we're reading, we should read more from books, because our eyes are so used to computer screens and our cell phones, our eyes can be strengthened by reading from a book. So whether you're just sitting down and reading or standing up and reading like I'm doing right now, it's good for you, and I encourage you to do it to keep your eyes working properly, because they say that, you know, we lose melatonin. And I think that it's a hormone that comes from the pineal gland when we subject our eyes to too much computer light, you know, glare from our computers and our cell phones. So when we go to bed with like 20% less melatonin, that contributes to sleep apnea, aggravates it, and also hurts us in the long run. So I encourage each of you to read more from books. Continuing on. Gravity seemed to take a holiday. I could feel no weight on my bare feet against the carpeted floor. My brain was still dealing with this when I suddenly began to rise, like a pea being sucked up into a drinking straw. Only in this case, the drinking straw was the beam of light, and I was the pea. Under ordinary circumstances, I think that the normal human reaction would be to scream out in abject animal terror. But before my autonomic nervous system could even trigger such a response, I was overwhelmed by a sense of peace and tranquility. I didn't have time to analyze it because the sensation of rising seemed to last no more than a second or two. As I would learn later, the beam of light itself, the drinking straw, in which I was firmly enclosed, caressed me as I traveled along its length and actually triggered the calming effect that enveloped me. Just as quickly as it had started, the journey ended. I don't think that more than 2 seconds had passed between the time the light first focused on me and the time that I found myself in a very large room facing the strangest creatures I had ever seen. Deep down, I suppose, I knew what had happened to me, but my psyche was still trying to deny it. There probably aren't many people who haven't heard or read about the tales of alien abductions that have been circulating on television shows and magazines and even in best-selling books for years. I didn't personally know anyone who believed the stories, although I was aware that there were vast numbers of people convinced of their authenticity. I was not one of them. But no amount of denial was going to alter the fact that I have been abducted, I was on a spacecraft, and I was among extraterrestrials. There was no other explanation except that I might be dreaming. But I knew that this was no dream or nightmare. this was real. Every concept that I had held regarding so-called alien abductions went out the window. I thought at the time that no person had ever been as wrong about this subject as I had been. The stories that I had so cavalierly dismissed in the past as the delusions of troubled people were actually true, it appeared. In the past, whenever I had given even passing attention to these tales, I thought that such an experience would not be survivable, that the human mind would simply snap at the shock and immediately plunge into an abyss of insanity. The fact that I was completely at peace and devoid of any fear seemed to belie the reality. The strongest emotion I felt at the time, to be honest, was one of unbridled curiosity. I was standing among a group of these three alien beings, and I was still cloaked in the beam of light that apparently had transported me. But now I could see the source of the beam, a small disc, about 3 inches in diameter, that was attached to the ceiling on a swivel. At my side was what appeared to be a padded clinical table, similar to what one would find in a chiropractor's office or in an examination room in the typical American medical office. The creatures themselves were very uniform in height, ranging from about 5 feet 2 inches to perhaps 5 feet 4. They were quite slender by human standards and had dark eyes that shone out from slanted openings that were not much more than slits. Their noses were very small, almost non-existent, with two tiny black dots that appeared to be nostrils. Similarly, their mouths were not more than slits either, with thin lips that hardly had any definition. I saw no indication of teeth. The ears were slightly larger than human ones in proportion to their size, and they were somewhat pointed. They reminded me of the ears of the fictional Mr. Spock of the Star Trek TV series. I could discern no body hair. There was an interesting range in the creature's skin coloring, almost a multiracial element. But unlike the different races on Earth with their distinct facial characteristics, such as lip thickness and nose and eye shapes, their features were uniform. Skin color ranged from grayish white with a barely perceptible greenish tint to a muted tan with the same greenish tinge. All of these beings wore flowing, robe-like garments in various pastel shades. I did not know at the time, of course, if this was their ordinary clothing or perhaps a uniform. It might have been professional garb, much like the surgical gowns worn by human medical doctors at a hospital. As I said, the room was large, rectangular in shape, and perhaps 600 feet by 400 feet, measuring about 20 feet from floor to ceiling. It was brilliantly lit and reminded me of a hospital ward, but the biggest one I had ever seen, with hundreds of tables identical to the one at which I stood. The tables were neatly arranged in rows, spaced about 10 to 15 feet apart, stretching from wall to wall, in all four directions. Above each table attached to the ceiling was a disc from which the beam of light that had enveloped me originated. Clustered around the tables were teams of 3 to 5 extraterrestrial creatures. Although I could not see details of the far reaches of the room, I noticed that the majority of the tables around me were occupied by very ordinary human beings. Most of them were reclining in various postures, some on their sides, and others in the prone and supine positions as the ETs bent over them in what appeared to be close scrutiny. A few, however, were standing beside the tables. At first, I assumed that, like me, they had just arrived. I noticed that a couple of people, a black man, normally I would refer to him as an African-American, but I had no way of knowing if he was an American, an African, a Jamaican, or whatever, of about 25 or 30, and a Caucasian teenage girl appeared to be engaged in quiet conversation with the aliens who clustered around them. A muted noise filled the room. There was something about it that was at once slightly familiar, yet frustratingly just out of my grasp of identification. And paradoxically, it was like nothing I had ever heard before. Then I seized upon it, the buzz of a large audience during intermission. Conversation. But the sounds were totally beyond those of any foreign language I had ever heard. The ETs standing around the tables were involved in hundreds of conversations as the teams studied their subjects. The light that held me in its focus suddenly flickered and went out. One of the three creatures in my cluster took a step toward me and said, "I am Guantel Mipsa." At least that's what it sounded like to my ear. I have spelled it phonetically here, or as close to it as I possibly can, but a case could be made for spelling it. In a number of other variations, such as Guandela Mipsa or Quantel Mipsa, the snippets of conversation that I caught from the ETs at several nearby tables made me wonder if some of the sounds might even be beyond duplication by human vocal cords. Transliteration, if it ever occurred, was certainly going to be interesting, I thought. If the ET who spoke to me was any indication, at least one of them seemed to be able to speak English. Maybe all of them could, for that matter. If that turned out to be correct, I thought, they probably would be able to speak other Earth languages as well. That initial assessment turned out to be absolutely true. I stared dumbly at this being who had introduced himself to me, not quite knowing how to respond. He couldn't help but notice my discomfort. "But you will call me Gus," he continued, pointing to a name tag on his robe below the right shoulder. Sure enough, the tag had Gus printed on it. Then I noticed that all of the extraterrestrials seemed to be wearing name tags. "I know it is impossible for you to address me by my true name, so I and all of my colleagues have taken names that are familiar to your tongue." "Hello," I replied. "I'm Phil." "I know it sounds absurd." "Well, that's it, my friends. I've got 1 minute left. I hope you enjoyed that. I will continue next week. I'm going to try to make some more time for reading out loud, reading that story. Maybe I'll continue or maybe I'll read something else. Thank you for tuning in, listening to my show. And remember to look at the stars tonight and think of universal brotherhood and sisterhood. I love you very much. And God loves you too, the creator of the universe and your mother and father God in heaven. Take good care and may God bless us, everyone. Bye.